This passage in Josephus does indeed indicate that there seems to have been a secret treasure chamber in Jerusalem. And, at least according to one opinion in rabbinic tradition, the most important treasure chamber in Jerusalem was built in the Temple Mount itself. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 50, Yochanan Hyrcanus and the Chamber of Secrets. I am Meir Soloveitchik. Where is the Ark of the Covenant? The popular obsession with the question is well established. And, as I believe we've discussed in Bible 365, the reason for wondering about this is obvious. After all, on the one hand, the entire purported purpose of building the temple in the first place was to create a home for the Ark. Thus King David proclaimed, "Behold, I myself dwell in a palace, and the Ark of God's covenant is still in a tent." But we also know that after the destruction of the first temple, of Solomon's sacred structure, by the Babylonians, there was no Ark in the second temple. A menorah was there, an altar of incense. Everything else essential was there, but not the Ark. So where did it go? Maimonides, in his Laws of the Temple, addresses this question head-on and, drawing on earlier rabbinic sources, gives us an astonishing statement about the original blueprint of the temple itself. He writes, and I'm citing a translation, quote, "There was a stone at the western side of the Holy of Holies on which the Ark was placed, and in front of it there was a jar of manna as well as the staff of Aaron. When Solomon built the temple, knowing that it would at the end be destroyed, he constructed underneath a place where to hide the ark in deep and winding secret tunnels. At the command of King Josiah, it was concealed in the place which Solomon had built. Along with it were concealed the staff of Aaron, the jar of manna, and the anointing oil. None of these reappeared in the second temple. Even the Urim and Tumim, which were available in the second temple, no longer responded prophetically, nor were they consulted." End quote. Whereas some rabbis believed that the ark was taken by Nebuchadnezzar during the destruction of the first temple, never to return, another rabbinic opinion, on which Maimonides builds, asserts that some years before the destruction of the first temple, the ark was hidden by King Josiah. He did so, according to this approach, during the national repentance movement that he launched. This movement, as we have seen, was an attempt to stave off the destruction. Thus, according to this rabbinic view, even as he sought to overcome Israel's sins, Josiah still recognized the possibility that his efforts may not prevent the ravaging of the temple. He hoped for the best and prepared for the worst, and just in case, stored the ark in a prepared secret chamber where, according to this approach, it lies to this day. Are there secret chambers from ancient Jerusalem where the most precious treasures of Jewish history can be found? Professor Yoel Elitzur quotes his father, Professor Yehuda Elitzur, who himself points to a fascinating passage in Josephus that may indeed coincide with this approach. And this passage in Josephus describes the precise moment that we are up to in our story of the sacred city. As we saw, the last of the generation of Judah the Maccabee to lead Israel was Judah's brother Shimon, who was murdered by his son-in-law and succeeded by his son, Yochanan Hyrcanus. During the reign of Yochanan, the Hasmonean dynasty was again attacked by the Seleucids, this time by Antiochus VII, the son of Demetrius II, who upon coming to power attempted to regain lost Seleucid territory in Judea. Antiochus marched upon Jerusalem, setting the stage for another battle between a Hasmonean and an Antiochus. But the difference between this ruler and the Antiochus Epiphanes of the original Hanukkah story is profound. The earlier Antiochus IV was known as Antiochus Epiphanes, but also nicknamed Antiochus Epimanes, Antiochus the Mad. This Antiochus, Antiochus VII, was called Antiochus Sidetes, Antiochus the Pious, because of the respect he showed even for the faith of his enemies. In 134 BCE, 30 years after the Hanukkah story, Antiochus VII laid siege to Jerusalem. It was in this state that a starving Jerusalem faced the prospect of a Sukkot without anything to eat. Yochanan therefore reached out to Antiochus the Pious, explaining how important the temple holiday was, and the king responded by not only agreeing to a truce, but by sending a korban, an offering of his own. Josephus tells us this story. And let us listen carefully to this fascinating account in his Antiquities. Quote, "But when the Feast of Tabernacles was at hand, those that were within commiserated their condition and received them in again. And when Hyrcanus sent to Antiochus and desired there might be a truce for 7 days because of the festival, he gave way to this piety towards God and made that truce accordingly. And besides that, he sent in a magnificent sacrifice, bulls with their horns gilded, with all sorts of sweet spices, and with cups of gold and silver. So those that were at the gates received the sacrifices from those that brought them, and led them to the temple. Antiochus, the meanwhile, feasting his army, which was a quite different conduct from Antiochus Epiphanes, who when he had taken the city, he offered swine upon the altar, and sprinkled the temple with the broth of their flesh, in order to violate the laws of the Jews, and the religion they derived from their forefathers. For which reason our nation made war with him, and would never be reconciled to him. But for this Antiochus, all men called him Antiochus the Pious, for the great zeal he had about religion. End quote. This is, ladies and gentlemen, in other words, the exact reverse of the Hanukkah story. During Hanukkah, the Hellenistic Jews contaminated the temple with the help of a Seleucid ruler named Antiochus. Here, the Jews defending the temple sought to celebrate Sukkot in the temple, and they were given a gift, a korban, by a different Seleucid ruler named Antiochus. Josephus then goes on to describe how the Jews saw this offering as a sign that perhaps peace could be made. And thus, he tells us, quote, "Accordingly, Hyrcanus took this moderation of his kindly, and when he understood how religious he was toward the deity, he sent an embassage to him and desired that he would restore the settlements they received from their forefathers." End quote. Josephus then goes on to write that this Antiochus, Antiochus the Pious, disregarded his advisors who had told him to destroy the Jewish people, to seek to eradicate this stubborn nation that refused to be Hellenized. Quote, "So he rejected the counsel of those that would have him utterly destroy the nation, by reason of their way of living, which was to others unsociable, and did not regard what they said. But being persuaded that all they did was out of a religious mind, he answered the ambassadors that if the besieged would deliver up their arms and pay tribute for Joppa and the other cities which bordered upon Judea, and admit a garrison of his, on these terms he would make war against them no longer. But the Jews, although they were content with the other conditions, did not agree to admit the garrison, because they could not associate with other people nor converse with them. Yet they were willing, instead of the admission of the garrison, to give him hostages and 500 talents of silver, of which they paid down 300, and sent the hostages immediately, which Antiochus accepted. One of these hostages was Hyrcanus's brother, but still he broke down the fortifications that encompassed the city, and upon these conditions Antiochus broke up the siege and departed." End quote. Thus was the siege ended, with the former enemy of the Jews, a man who was called Antiochus, now suddenly the friend of Judea and of the Hasmonean dynasty. And here comes the most fascinating part. Josephus further reports that then Yochanan Hyrcanus gave an enormous monetary tribute to Antiochus the Pious, which established an alliance and even a friendship between them, and they agreed to make battle together against the Parthians. But from where did Yochanan get this money? Listen carefully, ladies and gentlemen, to what Josephus further tells us. Quote, "But Hyrcanus opened the sepulchre of David, who excelled all other kings in riches, and took out of it 3,000 talents. He was also the first of the Jews that, relying on this wealth, maintained foreign troops. There was also a league of friendship and mutual assistance made between them, upon which Hyrcanus admitted him into the city, and furnished him with whatsoever his army wanted in great plenty and with great generosity, and marched along with him when he made an expedition against the Parthians. Of which Nicholas of Damascus is a witness for us, who in his history writes thus, when Antiochus had erected a trophy at the river Lycus, upon his conquest of Endates, the general of the Parthians, he stayed there 2 days. It was at the desire of Hyrcanus the Jew, because it was such a festival derived to them from their forefathers, whereon the law of the Jews did not allow them to travel. And truly he did not speak falsely in saying so, for that festival, which we call Pentecost, did then fall out to be the next day to the Sabbath. Nor is it lawful for us to journey either on the Sabbath day or on the festival day." End quote. In other words, what Josephus is telling us, citing another historian, is that the friendship established between this Antiochus, Antiochus the Seventh, and Yochanan Hyrcanus, the high priest and ruler of Jerusalem, was so profound that when they were celebrating a military victory achieved together, the emperor Antiochus the Pious stayed for an extra 2 days because it was for the Jews Sabbath and Shavuot, and Yochanan could not travel. But note well the fascinating reference Josephus makes to a treasure chamber of David, which Yochanan Hyrcanus opened up and from which he took out treasure as a gift to Antiochus. This is called by Josephus the sepulcher of King David. There was, in other words, some transmission about a secret treasure trove in Jerusalem that goes all the way back, ascribed to King David. And, ladies and gentlemen, given that the blueprint of the temple was designed by David and given to King Solomon to build, is it possible that this treasure trove that Josephus mentions was on the Temple Mount itself? It is this passage in Josephus that Professor Eli Tzur highlights in discussing the hiding of the Ark And even as Professor Eli Tzur's larger approach regarding the hiding of the Ark is slightly different from some rabbinic sources, this passage in Josephus does indeed indicate that there seems to have been a secret treasure chamber in Jerusalem. And, at least according to one opinion in rabbinic tradition, the most important treasure chamber in Jerusalem was built in the Temple Mount itself. We must, in closing, ponder the larger symbolism of Maimonides' description of a chamber of secrets in Jerusalem and what it says about our sacred subject. According to Maimonides, Solomon, perhaps through David's design, created a location where the Ark, the miraculous throne of the Almighty, could be hidden, for he sensed that one day the temple would be destroyed. The larger symbolic meaning, perhaps, is that the blueprint of the temple predicts and embodies Jewish history. It predicts that the people of Israel will always have enemies that seek its destruction. But the temple, according to Maimonides, also had built in a chamber in which the Ark could be kept forever, so that even in the midst of the ruins of a destroyed Jerusalem, the Temple Mount would serve as a dwelling place for the divine. The blueprint of the temple described by Maimonides symbolizes Jewish history itself. For the people of Israel, even in the midst of destruction, nevertheless, still felt God's presence, even as God's throne could be hidden in a Temple Mount in Jerusalem, and God still sensed in Jerusalem. Jews throughout the centuries asserted that whether Jerusalem was built or whether it was destroyed, God remained in Jerusalem and could be sensed by Jews in Jerusalem. And that is why, even when Jerusalem lay in ruins, the profound Jewish connection to that city endured until Jerusalem was built again. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.